Hello, and welcome to the Career Compass Employee Development Series, which will include podcasts, webinars, white papers, and whiteboard videos. Please check back for future releases on a variety of topics within our competency development program. This series is specifically designed for the Naval Facilities Engineering Command, or NAFAC. I am Jeffrey Weaver with Advancia Technologies, and I am joined by Ms. Ann Lair, Senior Vice President with the Center for Human Capital Innovation, and we will be your host. Today's podcast is Nature and Causes of Conflict. Hi, Ann. Welcome back to the studio. It's great to be working with you again.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for inviting me back.
And as you know, this series was created for NAFAC to specifically assist with the 20 non-technical competencies outlined in their employee development strategy. This podcast will allow us to share best practices, information, outline some skills, and describe ways for employees and managers to better gain working relationships and grow in proficiencies. The purpose of this podcast series is to provide insights to help employees become more engaged, as well as help managers, supervisors, and leaders alike create an optimum environment for employee engagement and improved retention. These podcasts will provide tips, techniques, and a solid understanding of materials and topics for a self-paced employee development approach. So that we are all clear on why we're here, I wanted to take a moment and share the objectives of this particular podcast. One, identify best practices for minimizing conflict in the workplace. Two, understanding and identifying causes of conflict. And three, develop best practices to eliminate conflict in the workplace. So let's get started. So Anne, thank you again for joining us. If you had to define conflict, how would you define it?
Conflict is just when you and I want something different, Jeffrey. Maybe it's type of food, a type of movie. That's all it is, though, is when you and I want something different.
Thank you. I understand that. So if you had to classify conflict, whether it to be good or bad, could you do that?
I couldn't, because conflict is neither. It just is. Conflict is not good or not bad. It is just like the mug in front of me, the computer in front of me. It's just something that happens when you and I disagree. Now, what happens is there's a lot of emotions that can show up. Sometimes just that word conflict can trigger people. And as a result, the emotions make us put a label on it of good or bad. However, in general, you wanting Italian food and me wanting French food is not good or bad. We just want something different.
So when we hear conflict, most of us automatically go to the negative. And we say that, well, conflict is not good in the workplace because it just stops us from being productive. Why do you think most people equate conflict with disruptive behavior?
I would use the word disruptive in a different way, Jeffrey. It is disruptive in the sense of it makes a person stop, like, oh, you don't want Chinese food? And again, it would be easy to go into, what's the matter with you? Why don't you want Chinese food? Chinese food is the best. And what it is, it's an opportunity for supervisors, managers, and leaders to take a step back and say, oh, what's going on in this situation? I thought it was going to be an easy answer of this is the way that we need to move forward in project management, for example, at NAFAC. And yet it doesn't seem like it is an easy answer. So that disruptive piece can be seen as negative, and think about technology and all the things that we're doing. Disruptive can also be energizing, like, oh, I need to stop and think about what's going on and actually engage in a dialogue so that we can move forward.
Thank you. That also makes me think about it in terms of when people say something is disruptive, doesn't necessarily mean it's in a negative context. Because if we are doing something the same way over and over and over again and coming up with that same result, but still not meeting the mark, we have to do something that's going to disrupt that regular flow and try something different or outside of the box. That's what comes to my mind as you said that. Is there a particular way that we as employees should be looking at this? Is there a tool that we might be able to use?
There is a great tool out there. It's called the Thomas Kilman Instrument, otherwise known as TKI, Thomas Kilman Instrument. You can take an assessment. It's actually an assessment you can take that gives you a score. You can also just learn about it, like we're going to do right now, and then figure out how to implement it yourself on your team. But this model, what it says is that there are 5 ways to manage conflict, and that supervisors, leaders, and managers need to know all 5 ways, because you don't want to do the same way every time, every time. You want to stop, think, look at the situation and say, oh, that situation calls for way number one or way number two. And so this model is eye-opening in the sense of five ways. Most people only know one or two ways. And again, it's that disruptive piece you talked about. It makes us stop and think and say, what's going on right now? And therefore, what is the best way to manage the situation?
Thank you. So now you also said that this was something for managers. Can employees use it as well?
Absolutely. So employees can use it. Anybody can take the assessment. I really recommend you take it as a group so that you can learn together and everybody can benefit it. I really feel that conflict management is the fancy way of just saying how to manage conflict is a life skill that we can teach in middle school and high school. If you go on to continue your education, it's something that we can all learn for the benefit of our families, our communities, and the places that we work.
I like the idea of being able to also use this at home and dealing with family relationships as well. So can you walk us through the steps?
I can. So there's, as I mentioned, five ways to manage conflict. So think of an axis, and the two axes are assertiveness, high and low, and cooperation, high and low. So that's all they say conflict management is how assertive are you being in this situation and how cooperative are you being in this situation? And the depending which way you're going, high, low on both, will tell you which of the five ways are best to manage. So let's start at the top left. So the top left is high assertiveness, low cooperation. And what this is, compete. I am going to assert myself. I'm going to make sure I get everything that I want, and I'm not going to cooperate with you. Now, a lot of people say, ooh, competition, bad, bad. I don't like competition. And I always say, actually, we are all competing all the time. So An example at home. So let's say, for example, the house is on fire and someone is going to assert themselves. They are not going to be cooperative and have a conversation with you. And we are going out this door. It's totally natural and appropriate to assert yourself. Now let's take it to work. Jeffrey, what are some examples where we all compete against each other, perhaps without realizing it?
Well, I would say in the military sector, it's about getting promoted. What do I need to do as an individual to get promoted? And if we're in the same career field and looking for the same promotion, we are definitely, like you said, going to be competing for that.
I would say not just military, any organization for promotion, as well as hiring, right? Say, for example, I want to hire two people and you want to hire two people, and there's only a budget for three people, right? So You and I are going to be trying to influence and to make our case that we need the two people. So you could think about promotion. You could think about resources. You could think about just getting a job. We are constantly competing, whether people realize it or not, and that is appropriate. And what we want to avoid, though, is that's the only thing you know how to do as a supervisor, as an employee. If that's the only way you know how to manage conflict, sometimes it'll be appropriate to compete. However, it's not always appropriate to compete.
Agreed.
So that's the first one, top left. Let's go opposite. Let's go bottom right now. So bottom right is high cooperation, low assertiveness. I am cooperating with you fully. Really, Jeffrey, please take it. It's all yours. Now, some people look at me and they're like, accommodate, that's what we call that one. Why would I want to accommodate? I'm not a doormat. I'm going to assert myself. I'm a leader. I'm supposed to be decisive. And again, this model tells us is there are times where it is appropriate to accommodate, even if you are the leader or the supervisor. What's an example you could think of for that, Jeffrey?
I would say it comes into counseling or mentoring a junior sailor. If you are a senior leader and you have an opportunity to mentor a junior officer or a junior sailor on being assertive, you can take that role of accommodating to help them take that role of assertiveness.
Absolutely. It's a great way to do it. Another way that you might want to think about accommodation is if it doesn't really matter, right? You want something, it really doesn't matter to me, then go ahead and accommodate, right? We're just building trust. We're building a relationship. Another example of accommodating is if you are not the subject matter expert, and I'm sure you've probably seen this, you're in a meeting with someone and one person who really doesn't know that much about the topic is asserting themselves and saying, this is the way we should do it. And you're like, you don't know anything about this subject. Just accommodate, listen and learn. So again, what TKI says is it is appropriate at times to accommodate. However, you don't want to always accommodate because there's impacts of that as well. So let's go to the third one now. So the third one is avoid. First one is compete. Second one is accommodate. Third one is avoid. So avoid is low assertiveness, low cooperation. I'm not going to assert myself and I'm also not going to cooperate with you. Now, again, a lot of people will say, that seems a little odd. I'm the leader. I shouldn't be avoiding. And there are times where it is absolutely appropriate to avoid. And you may not realize that's what's going on. A classic example is, let's say you're in a meeting and things are getting a little heated and people are talking over themselves. The facilitator or the leader or just an employee could say, hey, you know what? Let's take a break. Let's take a 5-minute break and come back to this. Mm-hmm. Or they might say, hey, you know what? Let's put that in the parking lot and then let's come back to it later on. That is the tool of avoiding. Doesn't mean you fixed it, but what we're doing is we're just calming everybody down back to emotional intelligence, and we're letting people have a sense to regain the priorities and then have the conversation again.
That's a perfect example with the putting something in the parking lot. I know you have, and I have participated in team meetings, brainstorming sessions, or just having a get together within our own colleagues, and we're trying to come up with new ideas. And when we hit that topic that kind of puts everybody on that emotional high, like you said, voices get raised, emotions are high, and people start acting outside of their normal behavior. So I like the idea of putting that on the parking lot, because then it gives us individuals time to calm down and realize that we were getting too emotional over the topic, so that we can then come back to it afterwards and talk about it more rationally. I love that.
Absolutely. And I really want to stress, it is not a weakness. A lot of people think, oh, avoiding is a weakness. It shows that I'm not a strong leader. Absolutely not. It shows that you're a savvy supervisor, a savvy leader, because you understand this is what's going on and this is the best way to manage it.
Also, to that point of being a leader, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're a supervisor. We have plenty of people that are non-supervisory that might lead a different part of a project or might lead a group. It can work for anybody, not just those in the quote unquote supervisory responsibility ring.
Great. So that's three of the five ways. Let's go to the fourth way. The fourth way is the top right. So top right is high assertiveness and high cooperation. Now, a lot of people throw the word collaboration around. Hey, I collaborated. When all they actually really did was just have a conversation. Because if you think about true collaboration, I am asserting myself, which means I'm asking for everything that I want. And I'm cooperating fully with you and making sure you get everything you want. That takes a lot of energy, Jeffrey. It takes a lot of resources. It takes a lot of time. So I always say, be mindful. Do you really need to collaborate? Because it's going to take a lot of energy. Generally, when things are high stakes, like if we don't collaborate on this, something is going to go badly. Mm-hmm. That's when we want to do it. But we really want to think about, do we actually want to go to the fifth way? And the fifth way is compromise, where I'm asserting some and I'm cooperating some. And that way I can really start to work with you. So those are the five ways: compete, accommodate, avoid, collaborate, and compromise. And those are the ways that TKI says, when there is just something that you want different than I really try to avoid the word conflict and even avoid the word disagreement. But when you want something different than I do, where is it appropriate to assert myself on that level of high and low? And where is it appropriate for me to cooperate so that I, as an employee, a supervisor, just someone working with someone else on the team, can manage the situation?
Great. I would also say, for a visual picture, if our listeners are trying to figure out what one corner means to the other corner, it's simple as drawing a square and drawing an axis line to the top, to the bottom, and from the left to the right, and creating four quadrants. And those quadrants are the four things that you've talked about. And the dead center of the crosshair, or the very middle, that would be the compromise, just to make sure that everybody is getting the visual as Anne described these five steps. Thank you so much for all of that. I truly appreciated some of the items that you pointed out. Would you say that there is a best practice that one should follow for this?
I would. I would say the best practice is to know what your preferred style is. We all have a preferred style based on how we grew up. And if we only use that style, we're actually going to become ineffective. And so we need to know what our go-to style is. Under stress, under pressure, what do I naturally go to? So for example, for me, I am a high compete. I'm an almost off the chart compete, which is great in some situations and not appropriate in all situations. So first, know what your go-to style is and just assess yourself. Are you using it appropriately? Is it the only style you're using? And if the answer is yes, then I would say the next best practice is, encouraging you to go outside, maybe practice cooperating a little bit more if compete is your thing, and really start to be a little bit more flexible around cooperation and assertiveness.
I totally agree. I'm sure you've had in your career, I've had in my career, I've had supervisors that were always operating in that very assertive category and never wanted to compromise or stand back at all. They always wanted to be the center of attention. But you also know, and I'll say from my perspective, those people might be supervisories today or supervisors today, but they're not necessarily leading. And to me, I will follow a leader anywhere, and I'll leave the supervisor standing on the side sometimes.
That's a great way to look at it and to really kind of think about in terms of our own emotional intelligence and how are we growing and how are we flexing our style to manage the situation in front of us.
Right. And I thought about, as you were talking about these, there could be something specifically for an engineer or a facilities command like NAVFAC. If we look at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, they are an engineering organization that provides services to customers. So sometimes they might be assertive in their expectation for making sure that the standards are high for architects and engineering projects, but they also have to be mindful of what the client is. One of the examples that comes off the top of my head is the Army Corps of Engineers. They have a large client right now for a large project, which is Arlington Cemetery. They're creating new sections to that cemetery for honorees and folks that are being buried there, to make sure that it's done properly and efficiently and everything looks well and coordinated. So the Army Corps of Engineers are the expert in engineering and figuring out how to make that happen. They also have to take instruction and feedback from the client, such as Arlington Cemetery senior leadership, because they know what they have in their mind, but they might not be able to know how it's going to look. And that's where that comparison and that collaboration, as well as the compromise, comes in my perspective.
Love that. What you've pointed out is that you can use multiple ways of these five ways in one conversation or in one client. It's not like you're always going to compete in every single conversation, right? Maybe I start off competing and then I listen to you and then I actually say, oh, it's probably better that I accommodate. So again, understanding and listening and really focusing on what the other person is saying can help you assess where do I start to assert myself and to cooperate.
Great. Thank you. So I'm quite sure that many of our listeners are thinking to this as they're listening to our podcast now is, what's in it for me? I'm an employee, I'm non-supervisory, or I'm a supervisor, a brand new supervisor, and I have a team of 10 people that I have to lead. What's in it for me for understanding how to use this tool that you described?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that we are never going to eliminate conflict. Remember, a conflict can be good. It just can be disruptive. It makes us think and take a pause and maybe do things a little bit differently. So we don't ever want to eliminate conflict. But what we do want to do is we want to manage it. And what's in it for you is learning how to manage it. Because if we always use the same style, we are reacting instead of responding. And so if I start to respond and to listen, I can actually strengthen relationships. I can actually build trust. I can create alliances, and I can move forward in your career wherever you are. So someone who, quote, knows how to manage conflict is really just someone who knows how to assess a situation, assess what's going on for them, and then be able to appropriately lead the conversation based on the five styles.
Thank you. That was a lot of good information. I appreciate you sharing those thoughts and wisdom with us. And I learned some things myself. So again, Anne, thank you so much for your participation in this podcast.
Truly my pleasure, Jeffrey.
And thanks to our listeners for taking time out of your schedule to listen to us as well. Please remember to check back for additional podcasts and addition to webinars, white papers, whiteboard videos, that are going to be located in the Career Compass Employee Development site under the Career Compass Employee Development Series. And this concludes our podcast on nature and causes of conflict. Finally, we would love to hear your questions, comments, or feedback on this podcast or future podcast. Please submit them to Career Compass at centerforhci.org, and that's spelled CAREERCOMPASS at CENTERFORHCI.org. We look forward to hearing from you.